Well, hello, Viva Albertos. JP Hill here, site editor for Viva Albertos. And we are joined today at the last day of the winter meetings over not too far from us in Nashville at the Opryland Gaylord Conference Hall Center Retreat area thing. It's got a big name. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it was a slow, cool winter meetings with one big move that still hasn't happened as the time that we are recording this. It is Wednesday night at 8 p.m. for us. And we are joined today with site manager Heather. Hey, Heather, how's it going?
Hello, good to be here.
Yeah. And then we got my left to right, Blake Newberry. Blake, how's it going with you over there in Ohio? Did you also win the draft lottery over there?
What'd you say? Well, unfortunately, being in Ohio, the draft lottery actually made me sad and not happy. So yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Ohio is the lucky state this year, apparently. And we got Adam. How's it going, Adam?
It's good, man. You know, unfortunate how the draft lottery went, but it's how the cookie crumbles. Hopefully this will get a good player next year.
Right, right. And even though it is a good day for mustaches, it's not a good day for Gabe. He's not joining us this time, but he'll be with us next time with his stash in full array. So I don't know. Do we have much to talk about? We got a little bit to talk about. Winter meetings weren't all that exciting, but the Cardinals did come away today with a new player. And so we can break that down. Blake, can you talk for a full hour on new Cardinal Ryan Fernandez?
I mean, I don't know if anybody's going to want to listen to it, and I probably can't get to an hour, but I can talk about them.
I don't think anyone listens to us anyway, so it's really...
Oh, that's true.
I'm, like, last-minute cramming to see anything, like, to learn about Ryan Fernandez. So if you could just vamp a little bit so that I can learn about him.
I know one thing about this guy, one thing alone besides his mustache. So, Blake, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, we can start with the mustache. The slider's amazing, but the mustache is probably better. Like, if slider's like a 60, 70 grade, the mustache is definitely an 80. I need a Ryan Fernandez versus Gabe, like, mustache battle.
We do. Wow. We should have one. That would be a great winter thing, because if the Cardinals don't sign another one, we're going to need a lot of content. So maybe an NCAA, like, mustache bracket with Gabe as a 1 seed. So.
That's actually incredible. I love that.
We should do that. I'm actually kind of like that idea.
You got Miles Michaelis in there too.
He would have four 1 seeds. It would be Ryan Fernandez. See, we're doing it now. It would be Fernandez, Gabe, Dylan Cease, and Miles Michaelis. And that'd just be a 4 seed contest.
You can do historical mustaches. Nice. See, this is the kind of this is the newsworthy content that we are known for.
I still want to do that dog competition, that puppy competition that I was talking at one point. We need to have an all Cardinals dogs episode at some point.
Yeah.
All right, Blake, save us. Ryan Fernandez.
We've already gone off the rails and it's just started.
That's okay. It's there's nothing to talk about. So.
Ryan Fernandez is interesting. I'm laughing because I wrote up a Rule 5 preview like yesterday, and I think I had 11 names on there, and Fernandez was not actually one that I included, so that's hilarious. But 3 of the ones that I did have on there got picked, so I'll take that.
Yeah.
But Fernandez is interesting. He misses a lot of bats. Primary cutter pitcher, actually, and I believe he added the cutter pretty recently. It's nasty, too, like a 40-something percent whiff rate. I think he used it like 40 to 50% of the time, too. Definitely a really good pitch. He has like a little bit of a gyro slider in there too. The two pitches kind of blend together a little bit. The slider missed bats a lot. Like they're going to miss bats. I would almost prefer to see him kind of maybe see if he can experiment with a sweeper a little bit just to add some pitch shape difference from that cutter. But I mean, it's hard to ask a guy to tweak a pitch that misses bats at like the slider was like 70% in a small sample size in AAA. Wow. So if he doesn't tweak it, he doesn't tweak it, and that's fine. I do have some concerns with the fastball. There's some injury history. So I know Kareem tweeted out that Fernandez had like a 17-inch average induced vertical break last year. That dropped to about 15 this year. And I'm wondering how much of that is caused by injury. So hopefully if he can stay healthy, that ticks back up to 17, which would be good because his fastball got just obliterated in AAA this year. I mean, average exit velocity was like 95. He gave up a ton of home runs on it. Just overall, not really a great pitch. He throws it hard. So, like, the velocity is there, and he has that go-to secondary pitch. So, really, if he can just get that fastball figured out, there's the potential for him to be a really good, a solid reliever, we'll say. He has good control too, which is interesting for a guy who misses so many bats. But I do think part of that is because he draws a lot of whiffs. So it's not, or a lot of chases. So it's not necessarily because he throws a ton of pitches in the zone, but he also gets people to expand the zone, which is obviously a valuable skill. He does have a little bit of a platoon issue. The cutter kind of helped with that, but lefties still hit him pretty hard. They hit him really hard over the course of his career. So he did get better at that. He's still just not perfect. So there will be some issues against lefties there. But like overall, it's a really interesting Rule 5 pick. I'm glad the Cardinals made one, picking so early in the Rule 5 draft, and because they need bullpen help. So if this guy doesn't pan out, they can just cut him, and they're down like $100,000 and then whatever they've paid him to that point. So I'm glad they made it. He probably was not my preferred Rule 5 pick. I actually really like Justin Slayton, who went with the next selection. But, I mean, he's a good pitcher. He's an interesting pitcher, and I'm excited to see how it goes.
Yeah. Adam, did you have a chance to look at some of the metrics? I know, you know, our friends online post some things. Yogi Berra, by the way, on the site posted some stuff as well, who is not, I checked, not actually related to Yogi Berra, so, which I was a little bit disappointed about. But Adam, did you find anything interesting else that you wanted to share, or had you run across that information yet?
Yeah, I mean, that was also what Yogi said, was something Kareem had said earlier in the day, and he actually kind of tripped out at you or whoever it was that when they tweeted it. But like, kudos to him when he pointed that out. But no, I mean, Blake really touched on his arsenal quite a bit. I mean, in just terms like of his fastball, he sits in like the mid to low 90s at 93.5 miles an hour. And he's got that really, really nasty slider. And, you know, like he said, like Blake said, he's working on that cutter. He's thrown it more. I can see as the months have gone by, he's thrown it more in the second half of the season than he did primarily earlier on in the year, which, you know, if that's more of an effective pitch, you'd like to see him, you know, employ that more next year at the major league level if he does make the team, if he's not cut. Kind of just regarding, you know, overall the fit on the roster, you know, like we've talked about that, you know, they need a lot of that pitching depth, especially in the bullpen. You know, if they're going to be missing out on bigger names in the market just because they've kind of spent money already in the rotation. And, you know, obviously worst comes to worst, they can make a signing later on, but this is a good depth signing to fill the back end of the bullpen. I do like it. And, you know, worst case scenario, he doesn't make the team. You just next man up and they fill in the innings. I mean, this, like, obviously there's still a lot of time and, you know, it's a good, you know, stopgap for what it is now. You know, they made the one move during the winter meetings, but hopefully they're still taking further steps to address, you know, the pitching staff. Maybe they make that, you know, maybe go for another reliever or two that's more effective. And then, you know, the all potent and all omnipotent, everyone wants big ace starter. So it's a good, you know, it's a good continuing cycle. Another like check mark they filled, but hopefully, you know, there's more to come and we'll see.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember now. I'd have to go back and look, and I'm not going to do it on the podcast, searching through Twitter, but either Gersh or Marmol, but it seems more likely it would have been Gersh today, made some kind of comment that, you know, it was an opportunity for Fernandez to come in and compete, you know, for his position, not necessarily guaranteeing him a spot. Now, obviously, if you don't know the Rule 5 draft rules, is that Fernandez would have to stay on the active roster, not just in the system, but stay on the active roster pretty much all season. You can't send him down, but there's some IL, you know, stuff that factors in there, but have to stay on the active roster pretty much all season in order to retain rights for him. If at some point you send him down, he goes right back to Boston and you have to pay, you know, the transfer fee, which isn't very much. So interesting to think that they're talking about him as a guy who can come in and compete and not necessarily a guy who's going to come in and be guaranteed a spot. But it seems to me, based on his stuff, that he's got a really good chance to make this bullpen. I think that, I mean, I realize King is a lefty, but I would take a chance with Fernandez over a guy like King. The one that I've got for you, Blake, would you take Fernandez? I know you haven't really watched him, you know, much, but you haven't seen Zuniga much either. Would you take Fernandez over Zuniga right now, or which one would you take? Because right now I've got Zuniga on my roster just because of numbers. So
yeah, I would 100% take Fernandez over Zuniga. And I say that as somebody who believes in Zuniga's stuff, yeah. But like the Cardinals brought him in and he had issues against lefties. He had issues giving up home runs. They didn't tweak anything. And then he still had issues against lefties and he still had issues giving up home runs, surprisingly. So if he doesn't change anything, I mean, he's likely to be a guy who throws 100 with a nasty slider who just leaves balls over the plate and doesn't tunnel well and gets crushed. So until we can fix that, I would much rather stick with Fernandez.
Yeah, yeah. Now, talking about that home run rate, I thought it was interesting because normally I look at home run rates, but I'm like, eh, not a big deal. Those things tend towards league average. But for Fernandez, just to kind of give you an idea, 2018 rookie ball, 11.5% home run rate. And then A+, 20%, A+, the next year, 15%, AA, 21%. And then you go back on his last big stop there in AAA 2023, 24%. So home runs are not a new problem for him. It's been all the way through. And you start thinking about a 20%, you know, home run rate at AA and AAA, you move that to the majors and in pain. Now, Bush does suppress home runs, but I don't know that he can suppress it that much. So are you concerned about that, either of you guys? Any of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit, but I think the way the Cardinals see it, this is basically just going to be an upside play. Like, if he comes in and gets shelled, then he's done. But they're probably banking that his fastball is going to be more effective. And when his fastball was effective last year, he wasn't as home run prone as he was. Or when it was effective in 2022, he wasn't as home run prone as he was in 2023. So, like, if he can get that fastball back, I really think that's going to be a big difference for him. I think his cutter actually gave up, like, probably more home runs in AAA than it should, and I wouldn't actually expect that to continue since his cutter's incredibly nasty. So I think there's kind of hoping for some normalization and then for maybe some improvement if he can stay healthy.
Well, I want all of you to know that we are probably the only place out there that will commit 10 good minutes to a Rule 5 pick, but that's the level of content you can get from Viva Albertos. We ready to move on, or we got more information and things to say about a guy we've never even watched pitch? We ready?
I'll just say I'm more excited to watch him pitch now. You guys have convinced me. Good.
We are the official Ryan Fernandez hype train, I guess.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah. All right, so the only other news Cardinals related that as far as things that happened at the winter meetings was the draft lottery. Did any of you watch the draft lottery live?
I did, and now I know what it feels like to be a New York Knicks fan. So, I mean, it's tough, but at the same time, this is the highest the Cardinals have ever picked, I feel like, in at least in my lifetime, right? I think like the 96, they took Braden Looper or something like that. But
in your lifetime, Adam, that's probably true.
Yeah, that was before me. But regardless, I mean, like at number seven, you're still going to, this is still like, as crappy as a pick is compared to where they were the lottery with the odds, you're still probably going to have a chance to take a better, at least amateur coming out of college or wherever he's coming out of high school than you have before in the past. So at least you're probably getting a little bit more certainty, I would say, with a prospect, like, then you would be picking in the middle to the late end of the rounds. Obviously, the Cardinals have had a lot of success because their player development, historically speaking, has been really, really good over the past 20 years overall. Obviously, the past 5 or 6 years is a different question. But, you know, they've done really well in that part of the draft. And now I would like to see what they can do with a player that has the upside and a little bit higher of a floor, you know, with having a number seven pick instead of, you know, like a later round selection. So,
yeah. Now, Heather, I want to hear from you because you've been talking all season and into the offseason about whatever curse it is that's on the Cardinals. And here it is. We finally get a shot, a decent shot, like an 8% chance. Not bad. Fifth highest odds in baseball for the number one pick. Our most likely scenario was the fifth pick. We end up with seventh. This is the last thing that's going to happen with the 2023 season was the draft selection. Is the curse officially over, and what did we do to finally end it?
Well, I can't say that the curse is over because there's still so many things to do. And I keep hearing more things that I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. I know, I feel like I just heard some news recently that I was like, okay. Okay. So I think, sounding so confident right now, I think that is the final thing. I think that is, you know, like the final, get the, like, if you're going to be cursed, just go all in on being cursed and just like get the worst, one of the worst possible scenarios that you could have gotten and just like get it over with. So hopefully
it's
that
like
means...
the payment finally came due on all that Cardinals devil magic over the years, and 2023 was the payout year, right? You know, that
right.
All the deferred money sort of stacks up, and then in that one time you gotta pay it back for all the devil magic. And,
yes,
and now we can go forward with a normal thing, right?
That's what I'm hoping. I do remember there was like a few years ago where the Cardinals won a lottery for competitive balance.
Oh yeah.
And like people were furious because they had just had a very good season. Plus they got the competitive to balance pick, and I think maybe that was the pick the year they got an extra pick for John Lackey or something. And so they had like three really good picks right off the bat.
Yeah, it could have been. That sounds about right, actually. Yeah.
I'm just like, we will never lose again. This will always remain. This is good luck. This good fortune will last forever. That's what we're paying for now, that hubris. It was specifically mine.
Well, I think Yachty coming back has to end the curse, too.
Right.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I think Yachty will free us.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about that? I mean, I don't. Do you guys have anything else to say about the draft pick? I mean, 7, you're going to get a good player. It really didn't matter. 5, 7, 9. I mean, it's not necessarily the same place, but the MLB draft is not the NFL draft. There's not just like these mocks where you know these guys are going to go pretty much in order, and there's a big difference between 5 and 7. Like they're probably looking at the same player in any of these picks, and the guys before him, the teams before him, might not even take. You know, an at slot, you know, high quality player. You never really know. So, Blake, what do you think? I mean, does it matter at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it matters, but like not that much. It just depends on how it all shakes out. Because some teams have drafting tendencies that they really like to lean into, whether it's college pitchers, high school bad, etc. Or they like to overslot, underslot. So that kind of affects who goes. In front, and I really think there's going to be a lot of talent available to the Cardinals at 7, specifically with pitchers and probably with some hitters too. So I'm excited to see what happens with it.
Yeah. Is there any chance they don't draft a pitcher? I mean, I know there is, but I mean, like they've got to, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance. Like if JJ Weatherholt somehow falls to 7 or something, like they're probably taking Weatherholt. But I would really love to see the Cardinals end up with Brody Brecht from Iowa or Chase Burns, who was with Tennessee last year but transferred to Wake Forest. And should actually be really fun because Wake Forest has a really good pitching lab, so I'm excited to see what they can do with him.
Yeah, I'd be pretty much in favor of them drafting the best Wake Forest pitcher they could as early as possible.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Do we want to talk Yachty? I mean, we could. I didn't have him on the list. I don't really know why. I guess it's because it's been rumored for a while, and I think Mazalek said it's the worst-kept secret, you know, that Yachty was going to join the staff. So if you didn't catch the news, I'm sure you have by now, you know, Yadier Molina is joining the front office on some level. He's going to be a special assistant to the president of baseball operations, which, by the way, I think he was GM at the time. But I think that's pretty much the same title that Mike Matheny had before he ended up going to the dugout. So Yadier's on the Matheny track. Mm. Let's not talk about that. But he's going to be doing a variety of things, working in the minors, working with coaches, working with players at spring training, and apparently it's going to be in the dugout a little bit, and which would be nice to see him there on the field every now and then and there at spring. What do we think about this? I mean, another guy, another thought, another opinion. Adam, you got any thoughts on Yachty at all?
Yeah, I mean, like, I almost feel like, you know, this is like an introductory role, and I think it's only a matter of time, hopefully, that he moves over to the bench and has more of a defined role around the players every day. But just in general, you know, like, with it's kind of hard to quantify the value of a, you know, coach, right? And I feel like the best way you can, you know, aside from, like, the wins and losses, which I feel it's more the team, you know, playing themselves, like the best way you can kind of, you know, abstractly value a coach is the way they're able to, you know, foster synergy and chemistry within the team. So, you know, if you've got a positive vibe in the locker room, which, you know, everybody will know, a lot of the writers, the players, it will be an elephant on the wall, elephant in the room, sorry. And people will know that. And I think that value really can't be understated with a guy like Yadier Molina. You know, we've seen that kind of come to question with Ollie Marmol, especially earlier this season. We saw the Tyler O'Neill beef. That was an issue with Schilt. And obviously, aside from the philosophy of wanting to move forward with a more sabermetric approach, and he wasn't on board with that, we did see him kind of have some rift in the locker room with some players. And I do believe that Molina, you know, given that he was just retired a couple of years ago, a lot of the guys are still on the team. He's one of the most respected people in the entire sport. And you kind of see that across all sports. It's like the former, like multi-time All-Star, the Hall of Famer who becomes a coach. You know, those guys are amongst the most well-respected. Those guys recruit the best players to come to either their school, whether it's college or to professional rank. You see with Sanders and Juwan Howard. That's a different sport. But kind of seeing with, like, the overall respect factor that comes with a, you know, All-Star, former future Hall of Famer player, I feel like that's unparalleled. And having a guy like Molina, you can't really quantify the value, but I think it's going to have a lot of, you know, just behind the scenes value in terms of shepherding everyone in the locker room. So that's my take on having him. Hopefully his role increases. I'm very excited to have him back.
Did you guys, either of you two, Heather or Blake, notice the juxtaposition that happened like today or yesterday when Mozeliak was asked about Marmol and talked about how much he liked Marmol, but then also said, but we have an owner who demands a certain level of production, of outcome, right? Basically implying that Marmol needs to win, otherwise he might not be around. So there's that one hand on Marmol, is Marmol's got to win, otherwise he might not. And also we're announcing the signing of Yadier Molina to a special assistant to the president of baseball operations. And then Descalzo comes in too. Is there anything to that, or am I just playing conspiracy theory for fun? Which I do.
I mean, I think there's something to it. And I mean, honestly, there should be. Like, I understand wanting to stick with a manager after a rough season, but turning up the heat a little bit and telling him like things have to turn around is not a bad idea when you're coming off a, you know, fifth worst team in the league kind of season. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Ollie's out for next year. It's just turning up the heat a little bit on him, saying we have replacements. And I do think they like Descalzo a lot too, so he could be another interesting name. But I think it's more so like, Ollie, you missed the playoffs again. That's probably it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do think they make those moves regardless of like whether, you know, I think they would hire Molina, Descalzo regardless. So I don't necessarily think that plays into it. I also think Marmol is on the hot seat regardless of whether they hired. So it just kind of fits perfectly together in that way, because he needs to win. And also these two names happen to be available for jobs. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, I think I really like what the Cardinals have done. I've been a big proponent of the club expanding, you know, their coaching tree, and then expanding what they're doing in the front office. They've admitted that they've been a little bit short, a little bit behind that because of, you know, since COVID basically. I think this is an organization that kind of runs, you know, right on the edge of their spending, even on coaching and front office personnel and payroll, just basically all the time. And so they've been slow to tick up that. But you know, some of the moves have sort of, I mean, they've all been reported, but it's kind of been minor. Like Joe McEwing has stepped up now to where he is kind of a coach for coaches, a bench coach for coaches throughout the organization, which I think is a great role, because they hire from within and they promote from within so much. So having someone there to continue to work with coaching development to develop their coaching tree, I think, is an excellent thing. And I think, you know, not knowing much about any of this, if you're going to pick anyone to do that, Joe McEwing seems like a pretty good choice for that. Daniel Descalzo in as the bench coach. You know, I like Descalzo. He was a pretty cool guy, overrated as a player a little bit, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be a great bench coach. Excited to see what he does. Yachty coming in. You know, so it's just been quite a bit of movement and expanding that tree. And I think that seems to me to be the way the organization has been leaning, and they finally got it done. So we'll see what shakes out of that. Any response to what's happened from that, guys?
I mean, I think that's interesting that you mentioned what you said about Joe McEwing, because when we look at the Cardinals coaching staff, like, it's pretty young and inexperienced overall.
Yeah.
Like, Ollie didn't really have a lot of coaching experience. Descalzo didn't. I mean, Yadi just came in. He doesn't. Pitching coach doesn't. Like, It's probably smart to have a guy like McEwing still involved in the organization, even if they didn't want him as a bench coach, but maybe a guy that other coaches can go to and kind of still see some of that training. So I think that's a good spot for him.
Yeah. Well, I think that's enough on the coaches. Let's move on to another really interesting. I mean, with the winter meetings were nothing really exciting happened. There was an awful lot to talk about. And one of them was Tyler O'Neill. The Cardinals, John Mozeliak came out and basically told the world what the world already knew, which was, hey, we are looking to trade Tyler O'Neill. And I can't really remember, maybe you guys can, but I can't really remember a time where Mozeliak came out and broadcast to the public a player that he was going to trade. That was a little
unusual. I was gonna say the same thing, so yeah. it seems strange.
Yeah
for him.
So react, I mean, like, this didn't surprise us at all. Should they trade him, should they not? Should he have kept his mouth shut? Is it gonna impact the negotiations at all? Adam, we'll jump in with you. Answer one or any of those questions that I just threw out at you.
Yeah, no. So I'm honestly kind of surprised. And I tweeted out also, I was like, is Mo speak dead? Meaning like the kind of beating around the bush and the kind of the political speak of, you know, the baseball side, you know, trying to see what his moves are going to be. I was kind of surprised that he was as blatant as he was, obviously, just given his past. But in terms of O'Neill specifically getting traded, you know, like the rhetoric is that, you know, like they want to move him because obviously he's on his last year of team control. And I guess they're banking on Dylan Carlson to be that fourth guy. And I guess if he is, they're going to be the fourth outfielder, if they're keeping Edmund to center with Newbar and Walker flanking him on either side. I think that's maybe not the worst idea. And you have Wynn at shortstop. And if Carlson's your fourth guy, I guess it's not too bad. But I'm just kind of thinking if it makes sense from that perspective, but if they're trying to win and go chips in all next year and trying to return to the former Cardinal glory, I think that you use whatever, you know, you bank on O'Neill having a comeback season this year and, you know, kind of treating him as like a 1-year rental, even though he's already on your team. And you trade away Carlson and get whatever value he has in order to, you know, address, you know, like maybe use him as a package for a Dylan Cease or whoever, or, you know, maybe you address somewhere else in the team, maybe the lineup or the bullpen. I just feel that if they're trying to win now, Tyler O'Neill, even if he might be there for a limited at bat, you don't know how many games he's going to be there for. His offensive production is just night and day when he's there. It's just night and day better than a guy like Dylan Carlson, at least from a projection standpoint, because he hits the ball as hard as he does. And, you know, we've seen him go off a couple years ago with that 5-war season. I think the remnants are still there. He pops off for, you know, a month or two, and then he has the sluggish season. But even if he's like a 2-war player instead of, you know, with like a 110 WRC plus, I'll take that over the 2-war from Dylan Carlson, who'll do it from defense and have like an 80 or 90 WRC plus if we're lucky. So I get the strategy. I disagree with it personally, just because if they're wanting to win now, I think Tyler O'Neill is the better bet in left field or in the outfield, or even as the fourth guy. But I guess since it is the fourth guy, I can also see a little bit of merit to keeping Carlson, but just because they have the value to accrue from a trade from Dylan Carlson, I just think that, and keeping like O'Neill as your fourth guy with his flexibility, you know, he's a really good defensive outfielder and he can hit a lot better than Dylan Carlson. So that's my personal gripe with it. Although I can see the pathway and I think there is a path to success with it. So just not the one I would personally take. And I guess most of everybody disagrees with me anyway on that. So
I do think kind of like, you sort of convinced me as you're talking to, something is weird about it, right? Like over the season, there was all these different little whispers of like Ollie Marmol doesn't like Tyler O'Neill kind of thing, or the Cardinals don't like Tyler O'Neill, you know, or Tyler O'Neill isn't working hard enough or something like that. And so that was weird. And now they're openly talking about how they're going to trade him. And the weird part about that, I think, is if you're like openly talking about trading someone, you kind of have to trade them then. Yeah. Almost.
Yep.
Because
no going back.
Yeah. Because then they just know that you wanted to trade them and there's kind of some friction there, right? So it seems weird to me to almost be like talking about someone's shortcomings and that, you know, and that you want to trade. Like, wouldn't you want to be talking them up in the season and then trade them, you know? So it seems something's weird. Like, either maybe Tyler O'Neill wants to go to a different team, or maybe there's some sort of friction there already, so they're not going to burn any bridges by saying we want to trade Tyler O'Neill. I don't know. It seems like there's already some bad, not bad blood. That almost seems too dramatic, but there's already some tension there. So that's why they're just like, whatever, we don't care. This is, everyone knows it, we know it, you know it, he knows it, let's just be out in the open about it, why bother trying to hide it? Mm-hmm. That's the only reason why I would think you would kind of do this in this manner, is if there's already tension there, it's going to happen, and you're just trying to make it as easy as possible. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And I think my thoughts on Tyler O'Neill are kind of complex, because I don't know if there's a world in which I would trade somebody who's two seasons removed from a 5-WAR season for, like, a middle reliever.
I'm not sure you can get a middle reliever at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're trading for less than a middle reliever, like, that's, you're trading a whole lot of upside for a guy who might potentially not even be on the roster, like, in the playoffs. So it's an interesting trade. And from a value, from like a talent perspective, I don't really see why they're doing it. I understand that they want Tommy Edmonds, the center fielder, which is a whole other thing. But it, to me, just feels like they don't really like Tyler O'Neill. Like with the spats that they've had that Heather mentioned, like, and then I even want to, like, to tie it to a bigger issue. When all the Cardinals have talked about all offseason with their signings is clubhouse chemistry and leadership. Mm-hmm. And then you see them bringing in a guy like Yachty and then Daniel Descalso and Lance Lynn, like players who have passed former like Cardinal glory days. It almost just makes me wonder that if they really just actually think there's a clubhouse issue and there's more to it than them just trying to talk up these guys, and that they do think that Tyler O'Neill is a part of that. Yeah. And that's purely speculation, because I have no idea if that's actually not in the clubhouse, and there's nothing quantitative to really measure that. But that's just kind of the sense that I get, because I've never seen Mo come out and basically say, we're trading a player in the offseason. And I really don't think he would do that unless he was willing to burn that bridge.
Yeah.
And it feels like he
Brendan I mean, Schaefer. Said, I was going to say, they've never said Tyler O'Neill specifically with most of these like little like whispers we've heard, but it feels like it's about Tyler O'Neill, right? Like they talk about something and you're like, that seems like it's about that. And it's, I don't know why, but it's just like, maybe because of the earlier thing with him not running around third base but still actually getting home faster than like most people on the team would, but like it feels like it's about him. So I don't know, maybe I'm just like, you know, conspiracy theory because it's boring in the off season and I want to come up with something, but it's weird. I don't know.
Well, Brendan Schaefer on his podcast, Brendan Schaefer Daily, check it out, by the way. Brendan's a great guy, and does a good job on his daily podcast. Mm-hmm. He kind of went through this whole same thing and sort of went through the whole litany of things. He's a team reporter, so he's with the club regularly, and you know, kind of from the issue at the beginning, with the, you know, running through a play at home, and then the back injury that what Brendan said was that they expected it to be a lot shorter recovery than it actually was. So did he milk it? Was he just protecting his stuff? Who knows? I mean, this is all speculation that even Brendan's like, we don't know. We just know that it took a lot longer for him to come back than the team expected. Mm-hmm. And then I guess there was I don't remember this, but I vaguely remember it in Tropicana playing the Rays on their turf. There was a couple games where O'Neill was healthy and scratched himself for a couple days because he didn't, the implication was that he didn't want to play on the turf. And so that might have, that's the kind of thing that definitely can rub an old school, new school kind of manager like Marmol the wrong way. And you start adding it together and it's a whole bunch of speculation, but then they're actively trying to trade him. So yeah, like you look like you're gonna say something.
I don't know. I hate I hate speculating about things like this,
right?
It puts things out there and people are gonna maybe take it out of context and we don't really know anything. But the pieces just all seem to fit.
Yeah, they do.
So it's hard for me to see it any other way.
Yeah,
well, and yeah, like Mosaic is actively talking about, like, they're basically like, we take this guy.
Yeah.
Like, he never does that, you know. You know, outfielder for trade, anybody?
Yeah.
And I don't recall him doing that. Even like, yeah, I'm trying to think of any time I've,
the only one that I can think of, and I don't think he might have said it beforehand. My brain's not working. Steven Piscotty. The only one that I can think of is Steven Piscotty, but for a totally different reason, that they
totally,
yeah.
wanted to go home to be with his his mom who had cancer, you know, so completely separate situation, but I think he was pretty upfront about their desire to trade Piscotty, but you know, not for bad reasons at all. So yeah.
And they pissed off the one Canadian on the team. That makes you wonder if it's like if it's an internal problem, or you know, maybe it is like the one bad seed in the whole bunch. But
you gotta watch those Canadians, man. Yeah.
famously difficult to get along with Canadians.
There goes that stream in Canada that I think was a big part of their plan next year once Bally ends. But actually, I was thinking about it though, like if. And it seems like Mozeliak and Marmol are like dead set. We can talk about this plenty in the offseason. Dead set on improving center field defense. So that means Edmund's going to be in center. Based on what I saw from O'Neill last year, I really thought O'Neill could play center. I mean, I knew he hadn't really, but based on his skill set, his speed, his hands, his ability to track balls, seemed like he was going to be about an average center fielder. He wasn't, right? So he just didn't look comfortable out there. So if you think about O'Neill as like, you know, locked in almost certainly to left field, then what I can see from their perspective and them saying, well, there's no way that we're going to pick O'Neill over Nootbaar. And I think we would all kind of agree with that. Like O'Neill has a ceiling of 5.45 WAR. I think that we kind of believe that a full healthy Nootbaar for a whole season is 4-5 WAR. So somewhere in that range. You know, I'd pick Nootbaar over him. I don't know that he's any worse defensively. I don't know that he's better, but he's not far behind what O'Neill actually would be now. So it kind of makes sense for them. And then they think of Carlson as like a legitimate starting or backup caliber center fielder if Edmund has to, and he will have to play some shortstop for, you know, up to 10 to 25 or 30 games in the season, Carlson's there. So that roster construction kind of makes sense if you're starting with the assumption that Edmund's going to be a center fielder.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And I think that's kind of why they wanted to do it that way. I think like all the drama speculation stuff plays into it, but like Carlson is just a better fit for this roster if they want to play Edmund. And I think really that's them wanting to play Wynn, which then bumps Edmund back to center field, which then also bumps O'Neill out of a job.
Right. Yep. And also, you know, the other thing they've talked about, and I don't agree with this at all, but it's something they've talked about, that they want to have more consistent roles for these guys, and they want to make sure they get the playing time that they need. And I mean, okay. I mean, that's fine. You can take that approach. I still think a more versatile offensive roster, I guess, is good. And moving guys around a little bit is fine. But considering the defensive downturn that they had last year, I can see why they're wanting to basically reacted to the opposite extreme this season, but I think it's an overreaction. Okay. I have something else on my list. My phone just turned off. So what was it? Trading Tyler O'Neill. Yes. So question number four on our master list here. This is, by the way, our organizational structure is 1-4 text. That's all the organization you get for this, guys. Is anything big coming? The Cardinals are definitively stating that they're not done, but they could be looking to add a non-roster invitee to spring training, and they would still say they're not done. So is this team not done? Is it done? Is it just a reliever? Are we going to have another big move? What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, so I will say, you know, the rhetoric was the same in terms of when he said we're not done, you know, from the Kyle Gibson to the Sonny Gray signing. But I will say his tone in listening to both press conferences was very different in both. So in the first one, he was more adamant saying, you know, and obviously speaking because, you know, Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn would have been, you know, not a very good offseason, not addressed at the top of the rotation. But I guess with Sonny Gray, I guess they technically did that, even though there is still plenty of room for improvement. So he's kind of just like checking the box now and saying, okay, yeah, there's still more to do. But he kind of just like nonchalantly said it instead of more kind of emphasizing it the way he did at, you know, at the beginning of the Kyle Gibson press conference. And that was different, obviously, here for the Sonny ones. And it almost makes me feel now, you know, you see the Juan Soto domino is about to fall, knock on wood. To the Yankees, you know, we're not really hearing a lot from the offense front. You know, Cody Bellinger is kind of doing his own thing, and like other players are not really linked into St. Louis. And it's really, you know, you're not even hearing Blake Snell anymore. Yamamoto is kind of more, you're not really hearing the Cardinals in on him anymore.
Yeah.
Shohei is his own thing. And it almost makes me feel like the one you know, last option, the last resort probably here that we're looking at is going to be Dylan Cease. And if they don't get Dylan Cease, I think that's probably going to be it. You know, they may make one or two like depth signings, but I think, you know, they're probably done spending, you know, like shark money. And I think anything, the bigger, the last piece is going to come via trade if they do it. You know, they could complete, and they're not even the front runners for the Dylan Cease, for Dylan Cease. I don't even know if they're in the top three anymore, honestly, you know, considering what other teams are looking to offer and kind of their arsenals that they have in terms of prospects to give Chicago and better upside prospects. Is, you know, you can't just accrue value on baseball trade values. You got to have someone good in order to give them. And I don't think the Cardinals have that top end prospect that maybe Chicago is looking for. So that being said, I think that if I had to take a guess, I think they're done. I think, you know, they're done making big moves. I think Sonny Gray was the last guy. And I think everyone else is probably going to be signing with different clubs, and it's unfortunate, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah, I think Adam's probably right on that. I don't think they're necessarily done. I think they're probably done, but I still think they're going to be sitting in that trade market, whether it's a Dylan Cease. I think with the kind of the Bally Sports money kind of stuff, their payroll might be a touch lower than we're expecting it to be. So like Tyler Glasnow might be out of the equation, considering they still need to bring in two relievers. He could still very much be in it if they don't want to be giving up, you know, key players or key prospects. That could be a good option. But I think, it's like Adam said, it's really Cease. Maybe the Marlins, because they're rumored to be open to offers for their pitchers. I think the Mariners might have said something similar. It's like, I wouldn't be shocked if Mo was calling around and seeing if there was a deal that really suited his purposes. But I think his comment today, and I know we'll talk about it in a minute, but about the Cardinals being World Series contenders, that to me is a comment you kind of say when you think the roster is basically formed. I feel like if there was more coming, that comment might have come in January or February as opposed to now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he would have said, yeah, I think we can be. We still have some more work to do and still have some ways that we're looking to improve this team. And I think when we're done with that, we will definitely be World Series contenders. But yeah, he just came out and said it. And we will get to that here in a second. So Heather, what do you think? Is this it? You know, or are you still holding out hope that something big's going to happen?
I don't think there's much left that's big that could happen, right? There's most of, like, kind of like Adam said, there's most of all the big signings and stuff are either done or kind of wrapped up other places, and the Cardinals aren't really involved. So I maybe, like I said, maybe they're not done because maybe there's the Tyler O'Neill trade is going to happen, and maybe it'll get something. And I don't think they're going to get anything super interesting from that, but it'll be something. So I don't think they're done, but I don't think I don't think there's going to be anything interesting going to happen anymore.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I do kind of wonder if the Cardinals aren't just sort of sitting there holding on to their one scarcity resource, is what I've been saying. They're like the one team that has offense to offer, and pretty good offense. I mean, you're talking about ranging from, they're not going to trade Nootbaar, but people are asking for Nootbaar, Gorman, you know, Carlson, Donovan Carlson. I mean, say what you want. Some of those guys have some flaws, but that's about some of the better offensive pieces on the market. Even a guy like Donovan, who we might think of being somewhat expendable as a middle infield, outfield utility guy who doesn't really have a starting spot. You know, he's a 2-3 war player that another team could really, you know, throw in two or three positions on the field. He's an attractive piece. And I almost wonder if the Cardinals, if their plan isn't just to kind of sit back and just sort of say, hey, you know, did you miss out on Snell? Did you miss out on this guy? You know, you didn't get the player you want. Well, here you go. You want to pay up for an offensive piece? We'll give you an offensive piece, but you're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to give us a good deal. And I think that's kind of what he's doing. With Snell not going yet, Yamamoto not going yet, Glasnow still on the market. You know, I think like Blake said, Cease is the guy. Cease is the guy they're looking at. Maybe one of the Mariner pitchers, but, you know, there's less smoke around that. That they're just kind of waiting the White Sox out, waiting the market out, see what happens. And if the White Sox prefer a major league offensive talent to, you know, a prospect of minor league packages, then, you know, the Cardinals would be the one that they would turn to. So I think that's what they're doing. There's too much smoke around Cease for there not to be a little bit of fire, but I think they're just, kind of biding their time waiting, and they don't feel like they have to do something. I might disagree, but they don't feel like they have to. So yeah, I don't see anything happening soon besides maybe signing a reliever and then an O'Neill trade. But I really kind of thought an O'Neill trade was going to happen at the winter meetings, and it just hadn't happened. So,
you know, I pictured the Tyler O'Neill trade like the Moneyball scene where like Billy Bean walks in the dugout and sees Jeremy Giambi partying, just goes up and trades in 5 minutes. Like that's
yeah,
like those comments that come out, and then like 5 minutes later, Tyler O'Neill's been traded to the Royals.
Yep. Tyler, you're going to the Royals.
Yeah.
So the traveling secretary will help you with your stuff. Yeah, I mean, I can see us getting like an A-ball reliever or something at this point, just the way that this has gone. So,
well, and I think that actually might happen because, I mean, Mo pretty much said they're looking now at free agent relievers and kind of putting trade talks on the back burner. So I could see them just signing one or two bullpen guys, kind of fortifying that, and then just taking some kind of prospect for Tyler O'Neill and being done with it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what that seemed to be about. Like they had, and I also wonder too if there wasn't some Dylan Carlson stuff with the Alex Verdugo trade. Like those kind of match up a little bit, and I wonder if either, you know, the Cardinals didn't want that kind of package for him and really thought that Carlson was more valuable to them, and so the Yankees, I wouldn't say settled, but went to the more consistent but less productive option in Verdugo. Who knows? But because there was a lot of smoke around a Yankees Cardinals trade from the trading deadline on. So yeah, I really think that maybe the Cardinals sent that stuff out there with Tyler O'Neill and got very little in response. We're like, okay, we'll just sign relievers and we'll just take whatever we can get from O'Neill whenever someone wants to come shopping. So the last thing that I've got here, we got about 14 minutes left. I've got a timer on the screen now, so I can tell exactly how far into this thing we are instead of guessing. Last thing I have is Mozeliak's comments today when he was asked whether or not he thought that his team was a legitimate contender for the World Series. And his answer essentially was yes, which I wouldn't expect him to answer anything different, but we're not bound by the same optimism that Mozeliak's bound on. So I will throw it out to you guys. Are the St. Louis Cardinals, as they're constructed now, and we could assume maybe some relievers. I would say let's not assume someone like Dylan Cease. As they are with a little bit more help, are they actually a World Series contender? And we've been starting with Adam, so let's just keep going. Adam, I know what your answer is going to be.
Yeah, so I still don't believe, it's a resounding no, I still don't believe that this team is, let alone a World Series contender, probably not even a playoff contender. I still think that if they make the playoffs, it'll be as a fringe wildcard team with a team like Cincinnati or Milwaukee or maybe even Chicago taking the reins to the top. You know, given that this team was like a 70-71 win team and, you know, their Pythag was pretty close along to it. And, you know, if you take the exact roster that they have now, and maybe if you inject the war of the players that they traded away, and maybe if you add in and like you swap out some of the value of the players that they have signed, consider the fact that some of the players will ascend, you know, like Walker and maybe Newbar will play a full year. I think at best you're looking at maybe another 80-85 win team, which is, you know, kind of what we were looking at last year before the season started. And I still think that, you know, like, I think that number will remain the same, right? I think that's my projection. Again, you know, this year it was good enough to be a 5 or 6 seed in the National League playoffs. But, you know, if you're trying to, you know, on a projection basis, when you're a front office and you're going into a season, it's January or February, you want to feel more comfortable. Obviously you can't just like, you know, like there's no guarantee ever. There's no such thing as a sure thing, but you want to be at least feel a little bit more safer than kind of just banking on, you know, waiting to the last minute to make a signing or a trade at the deadline in order to hope to get in, you know, via like, you know, your like double magic way. I think those days, you know, kind of relying on that, you shouldn't be doing that anymore. You should be focusing on trying to build a 90-95 or more win team and, you know, playing it that way. Cause if you don't win the World Series, you know, playoffs are a crapshoot, mathematically speaking. So, you know, at least get to the playoffs and see what happens from there and do it with a team that can win legitimately 90-95 games on paper. And I just don't see that right now. And even if they make a Yamamoto signing or a Snell signing or a Glasnow trade or a Cease trade, you know, everything comes at a price, especially with the trade, with the trade. And I just don't see it happening this year. And I think this is more of a 2025-2026 playoff caliber team. That's assuming everything goes well with development. And right now I just don't see it.
Yeah. I'm with Adam. I don't think the Cardinals are a World Series contender. And now I'll qualify that with saying if you make it to the playoffs, you automatically are a World Series contender. And I mean, if you disagree, like 84 win Diamondbacks, 2019 Nationals, like any team can go on a run, get hot and win it. It's not necessarily something you want to bank on. You'd prefer to have more talent on your team than the amount of talent that an 84 win team has. But I do think the Cardinals are playoff contenders. It kind of depends on how the NL Central shakes out. But like when I just look at that roster, there's just too much uncertainty for me to think that they're actually going to be a World Series contender. I mean, the rotation's probably mid-tier-ish, like 12th to 20th, probably, assuming relatively decent health. And then, I mean, let's look at you're starting Jordan Walker in right field. You hope that he gets better. Is he going to be better than the two WAR player? Probably not. You have Tommy Edman in center field. You have Mason Winn at shortstop. You have Arenado and Goldschmidt are aging. Like, there's a world in which there's just too much uncertainty and they're all going to decline. And now that's very doom and gloom. So like, they're not all going to be terrible probably, but it's just too much uncertainty for me to look at them and say like, yes, they're definitely going to win 90 to 95 games and contend for a World Series.
Yeah. Heather?
They're a World Series contender in the fact that they play in the Major League Baseball League, and like that makes them a contender by definition, and that they they have a chance. But like, if they make the playoffs, I don't like how that rotation would line up against other playoff contenders. They don't seem to have a true number one or really number two. They have a couple of threes maybe, you know, so that kind of concerns me lining up, especially in a shorter I think the wild card is three games now. Mm-hmm. So if they made, and I'm trying to figure, I can't even remember how the playoffs work anymore. But if you're not the top division winning team, you have to play the wild. No.
Are there two byes or one bye? I think there's just one bye, right?
One bye, right? And then, yeah. And then there's two wild cards.
As Cardinals fans, we should know this because we should have been predicting. Yeah. You know, yeah. But I didn't know. Yeah.
I'm like, what? How does it work now? There's two, and then if it's a full moon, they have to.
Yeah, right.
But if it's a Wednesday, so yeah. I think there's the top team gets a bye, and then the other two have to face. And but the
well, we could look it up
there, anyway. There's definitely a three game series at some point, and, yeah. And if the Cardinals make the playoffs, they're probably going to be playing in it. and I don't like how that rotation would line up for a three game series or even a five game series. Really, it's not. I don't think it's strong enough as it is. Yeah. But. I will reserve the right for something interesting and lovely to happen and someone to have a career year out of nowhere. Maybe that'll happen. Maybe Yadier Molina will do some magic and that'll happen.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been saying kind of for the last week or so since after the Sonny Gray signing, you know, I kind of did the math a little bit and sort of realized that, you know, yeah, in my opinion, the rotation is disappointing. I like Gray. Gray's fine. Nothing wrong with Gray. He's a true, you know, depending on how you define it, you know, number one, number two caliber. I guess I'd put him as a number one, but I do think that mm-hmm. he's going to be stepping. He's not going to be a five WAR pitcher next year. He's just not. But mm-hmm. a 3.5, 4, maybe. I mean, that's possible. That's the number one, number two starter in the league. But like the difference between the rotation that they brought in right now and like the one that I wanted on my master plan series is only a couple FWAR, you know, I mean, Shota Imanaga and, Eduardo Rodriguez and Tyler Glasnow are all much better pitchers than we've got, but the gap between, you know, those two, assuming that they don't just, you know, get injured and fall out, you know, is only like 1 or 2 WAR. So it's not a huge bump. Like that's not what's going to really make the difference on the team. So in my opinion, I know I wrote about this, so I'm kind of repeating myself with those that read the site, but the only areas that could really make a huge difference unless you believe that Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt are going to go back to seven WAR players, which I personally don't. They might not be two or three WAR players, but they're not going to go back to six or seven. It is guys like Jordan Walker and Lars Nootbaar and Nolan Gorman and, you know, I mean, that's kind of about it. I mean, maybe someone like, I mean, like, if you really think that Andrew Kisner was a negative WAR player and Ivan Herrera could start 80 games and could be one or two or two and a half WAR, well, you know, I mean, you know, there's other places that they could have significant gains, and it's all going to rest on whether or not these young, talented star level players can become young stars. And if they do, then I suppose maybe they're a World Series contender. But I kind of think that those players are going to have to step up and perform quite a bit better just to get back to our normal 87 to 91 win total, because I do expect injuries in the rotation, and I don't have a whole lot of confidence in any other starter not currently in the top five other than perhaps Zach Thompson. And I just don't put a whole lot of start or stock in six or seven starts. I like Thompson. I like what we saw, but AAA wasn't good, and the beginning of the season for Thompson wasn't great. And so, you know, we've seen good performances, even with good peripherals over small samples. And Thompson's got to prove it to me too. And I think you're probably looking at 20 to 25 starts from Thompson just because someone's going to get hurt. And then you just start lowering the floor from there. And so, you know, it's just a lot of risk. As I said today, I didn't really think about it. Mo is risking Ollie Marmol's job here is what he's doing because Mozeliak's not going to get fired. He'll just get promoted out of his position. But it's a lot of risk. And, you know, I just don't think that they've got what they need to come out on top there. Maybe not even in the Central, to be honest. I expect the Cubs to make some significant moves. So we'll see what happens. Any last word, guys?
No, but I feel like we've left this off on a depressing note here.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. Like, I could talk about how bad payroll is going to be to really, you know.
Yeah. I'm excited, Yadier Molina.
Yeah.
And, you know what? Even though I don't think, like, Lance Lynn is going to be as good as, you know, he obviously was years ago, it's kind of exciting to have Lance Lynn back.
Yeah.
I think it'll be fun, at least for shenanigans and stuff. Fastballs. That'll be interesting.
Jim Hayes interviews.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. That'll be fun.
Good Jim Hayes. Yeah, because Sonny Gray also seems like a pretty good interview. So
yeah,
it's gonna be an interesting Jim Hayes year. But
yeah, so if it's not gonna be like necessarily the best field product, at least, you know, I'm entertained. I have some good characters, some good personalities. I'll take that. Miles Michaelis seems like he's always had a good personality, and especially with Adam Wainwright being retired, that's a loss personality wise. So
yeah I'll give you some good news. I'll give you some good news here at the end. I was just talking about young guys and overperformance. Well, if you believe, and I do, that Jordan Walker has the athletic skill set to be an average outfielder, and he's got speed, they're not terrible hands, he's got a great arm. He never tracked balls. So, you know, he just spends all winter down in Jupiter, which he is, tracking balls and learning routes and doing all those things, getting reps and reps and reps and reps. He can come back and be about a zero OAA right fielder, which, by the way, that sounds average, but that actually would put him below average because most outfielders are a little bit plus in OAA. But it wouldn't hurt his WAR that badly. If you put him at zero, and then you just take his offensive performance as, what was he, 21? Was he 21 last year? 21, 22?
I think it was 21.
21, yeah. 21-year-old. 116 WRC plus as a 21-year-old, guys. I mean, that's like, he's a baby. He's like Adam's age. So, throw a chance at Adam.
I was going to say, isn't Blake my age too? Like a year older, maybe?
But I don't know. Yeah, probably so.
But when you're the youngest, then that makes you like 10 years younger than you actually are.
You feel younger, Adam, because you haven't been on the side as long. I think that's really what it was. So. Plus, Blake's like married and stuff. So, you know. But anyway, back to my point is that, I mean, like Walker should be a better hitter this year. He really should. He struggled at the beginning of the season. And there's some flaws in his approach and stuff like that. But if he takes the same kind of step forward that we saw from Nolan Gorman, and Walker's a better hitter than Gorman, then you start talking about a 120, 125, 130, 135. I mean, stop me when I get, you know, run out of oxygen up here. There's a point where Walker's offensive potential at a zero OAA, both of those are optimistic, becomes what? I mean, what's a 135 WRC plus right fielder with a zero OAA? Well, that's like a 3-WAR player, you know? Mm-hmm. And anything above that is 4 or 5 WAR. Then you start getting into, I won't say it. Yeah, I will. Juan Soto territory, right? I mean, that's the extreme upside. But Soto can't field either. So there is potential on this roster that we haven't seen. And I personally think the Cardinals are banking on that. That's what they're banking mm-hmm. on. That's where they're putting their eggs. They're not putting their money into it, but it's where they're putting their eggs, I guess.
All their eggs in that basket.
The good news is Jordan Walker, and there's a chance that he'll be a superstar. There you go.
And great personality, that Jordan Walker. Yeah, he's got everything.
Right. And Mason Woodwin could not, you know, he could hit better than a 27 WRC plus. That's likely to happen. Very likely to happen. So there's hope there too. Yeah. Well, guys, we're right at an hour. What did I say? I had a timer up there and we would finish right at an hour, 1 hour and 1 minute. And so right on time. Hopefully the next time we get together, which will probably be one more time before Christmas, we'll have some more news and some more players to sign and talk about other than a Rule 5 draft pick. But for Heather and for Blake and for Adam, who's just about the same age as Blake, have a very merry December, and we will see you around the site. Take care, everyone, and happy Saturday. Actually, I think this is going to publish on Friday, so happy Friday. See you guys.